But we continue in our study of the covenant applied. Tonight I'm going to look at the idea of purpose. How important is purpose in mankind's existence? I suggest to you that purpose is at the very core of who we are. And when people perceive life to be purposeless, though they might continue to live, they are actually being destroyed. They are, in a sense, only an outward shell going through the motions, without zeal or hope or vision. And the old Soviet Republic, I don't like to use the word Republic for the USSR, but anyway, they called themselves that. But they had many oppressive prison camps, and many times they would assign purposeless work to the inmates in order to destroy them as people. So they would need to move this massive pile of rocks from point A to point B, and there's a time constraint and time limit on how quickly they had to move them. And once they had done the job and made it within the time barrier, then they had to turn around and move them from point B back to point A. And this was back-breaking, grueling work, and they would just make them do that constantly. And those people realized, although they were working, and people, we are made to work, and even to work hard, when there's a sense of purposelessness, it utterly destroys them. And that was the objective, was to destroy those prisoners. To destroy them without killing them, to remove what is essential to being human, that you have no purpose. Another way these prison camps sought to destroy people was to turn the inmates' natural God-given purpose into an animalistic survival focus. As Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote in his experience in one of those gulags or prison camps, he said that the way the prison guards fed the prisoners was a carefully worked out strategy so that there was not enough for every prisoner. Not every prisoner could get a portion of the food, and they purposely do that and give out the rations for the day for that meal, and so that the prisoners would fight each other. It was survival of the fittest in the ultimate sense, and so you would be fighting against everybody. There was no camaraderie, there was no unity, there was no building one another up. It was, I'm going to destroy you, because if I don't get that food or I don't rip it out of your hand, then you're going to have food and I'm not going to have food. So this destroyed the possibility of being any chance of community for the prisoners, and it crushed the essence of who man is. His purpose and productivity under God was squashed and replaced with something demeaning. So his purpose now became just the mere fact of survival at all costs. And these are extreme ways that man's purpose is deflected and blurred. However, we live in an age that possesses vast potential to do the same. And that's namely to deflect our focus by reinterpreting our purpose, suggesting that there's another purpose that we could be doing. When you misunderstand your real purpose under God, then your desires, your energy, and your emphasis is turned toward that which is ultimately empty and worthless. When we ignore our God-given purpose, then we chase after mirages and promises. These mirages promise to satisfy stuff that they never do. These mirages, they only disappoint and destroy. So we're deflecting our objectives and shaping our life according to certain things that are empty. Why is the family in our day in such disarray? Why do you think the family is in such disarray? The norm is dysfunctional and broken families. That's the norm that you see. And I assure you that it's them not knowing and not bowing to the purpose in God's plan. I believe that is the major reason. They have not sought out and they have not bowed their will to the purpose that God has given for their existence, for their being there. We'll see again that vital to sound understanding of the family and its purpose is the covenant. How do we understand what the purpose is? Without a sound grasp of the covenant, we will struggle to make sense of and keep the family on track. In other words, we will not be able to fully embrace the purpose of the family in God's kingdom plans. We will not be able to keep our focus upon those things that God has revealed we should. He tells us what to focus upon. And when the family drifts off that track that God has told us to focus upon, so does the whole nation drift off the track. So the family is inescapably covenantal. It's a covenantal unit. And all the aspects or marks of the covenant that we've been talking about over this series can be seen in its God-ordained way of functioning. See, if God is transcended, he's over the whole lot. He gives instructions. He lays it out. He is the ultimate word on the family's purpose. Why does the family exist? Is this just an idea of man? Is it just for the purpose of man? Is it an individual's purpose? Do we just want to do it because we feel this might satisfy some desire within us? But God is the ultimate word on his purpose. It's set up in the details of its functioning. Thus his ordained hierarchy is fundamental. The husband is to be head of the family, and the children are to honor and obey their parents. What is required by God from each person in the family is clear, and also what he expects from the family as a whole is also clear, and there are great promises of continuity and blessings for those who walk in accordance with God's ordering, and threats of judgment if those things are ignored. Because he says, this is how it goes, if you walk in this way, these are the blessings that will come upon you. As Malachi 4:6 warns about this potential cursing if is not the way God has laid out the family, if it's not functioning in that way. And he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to the fathers lest they come and strike the earth with a curse, Malachi 4:6. And when the family structure and order is rejected, God's judgment does come upon that people. And thus Paul exhorted the Ephesians in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 and 3, saying, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. You can see the vision there goes out to behold earth, and he's speaking to the New Testament believers saying, the vision is behold earth and your goal is to live long on the whole earth. We'll come back to that verse a little later. The negative is clearly implied by Paul. Namely, if they did not bow to his command, then negative sanctions would come upon them. These are the covenantal obligations which are clearly still applicable in the New Testament age, according to Paul. So the purpose of God for each family member has been revealed, and there is no doubt as to what they ought to do and thus focus upon, about what's important and where blessings come from. So the Lord said to Abraham in Genesis 22:18, in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. So you've bowed your will and your heart to me, and therefore the nations will be blessed. But the blessing flows out of his obedience, out of following what God has revealed. Then through Moses he said, all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you, because you obey the voice of the Lord your God. Deuteronomy 28 verse 2. And the psalmist says, blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. So the blessing flows out of our obedience to the purpose of God, as God has revealed the purpose for us in whatever sphere of life we're looking at. What is the purpose in this area? What is the purpose of this aspect or this individual? So when a father and husband ignores his purpose, he doesn't reject the idea of purpose. He redefines it. He redefines God's revealed purpose for him and replaces it with some other activity. When men reject God's purpose for them, they don't have no purpose in their lives, but an inappropriate purpose. They squander their time. They focus in directions that they shouldn't be focusing. The covenantal purpose of man is to lead in some capacity, in the purpose of bringing all things into subjection to God's rule. This is what it is. The purpose of man is to lead. And at different positions in life, different ages in life, you will lead in different capacities. But the objective is for the man to lead. And the objective in leading is unto the end of dominion, bringing everything into subjection to the Lord. That's the goal. This was what was given to Adam in the garden. It was repeated again to Noah after the flood in Genesis 9. And the Lord told Abraham that the extent of his covenantal responsibilities was that all the nations of the earth would be blessed and come into line with what God had said. And thus Jesus continued on that same line and merely repeated all of these things when he gave his disciples the responsibility of discipling the nations and teaching them everything that he had commanded in Matthew 28. So he was just keeping that same thing. This is the objection. This is your purpose. This is the broad goal, the big picture. So we see that man does not exist for himself. He is not to serve himself, he is not to serve his own agenda. Rather, it's about God's purpose, which is dominion over all things. However, God doesn't leave us with only a general principle. Okay, you've got to exercise dominion over all the earth. He says, no, I'm going to give you details as to what that actually looks like, how it comes about. And he lays out those details of how we achieve this. So for all people, men, women, boys, girls, they are expected to bow their wills to God for to sacrifice themselves for the benefit of others, because broadly that's what they're expected to do. None of us exist in order to be served, but so that we might serve God by serving others. So we exist so that we might glorify God by doing his whole will. And this gets dusty very quickly, for we are all, no matter our age, meant to be seeking to do God's will, which means bowing to his purpose and serving others. A husband and father is to sacrifice himself for the benefit of his family members. Obviously, there's a broader aspect of sacrificing himself for others beyond the family, but we're focusing on the family, and you can extrapolate from that outwards once we understand this. He represents God to his family members, which means he ministers to their needs in accordance with God's truth, which means he imitates the way God relates to us. He imitates it to them, and the way God deals with people, the way God supplies their needs. So the way the father or the head of the household supplies the needs of his family is not according to their wants, it's not according to their demands and to their perceptions of what the needs is, it's according to how God has revealed what the responsibility is and what that should entail. And it is God who defines what people's needs are. So what do family members need? Well, they need love, they need protection, they need instruction in righteousness and truth, they need food, they need clothing, they need shelter, they need justice. You could name some more if you want. There's a number of things that the family needs, and the father has the primary responsibility of meeting those things. So the head of the family is to define his purpose according to these responsibilities of nurturing and preparing the next generation. That's how he does it. Okay, what is my purpose in life? This is my purpose. Fundamentally, this is where it is. In doing these things, he realizes his purpose with respect to the family. He is not fulfilling his purpose if he merely is supplying food, clothing, and shelter, since instructing his household in God's ways is fundamental to his purpose, as we learn from God's dealing with Abraham, where the Lord says in Genesis 18:19, "For I have known him, for the purpose, or in order that, he may command his children and his household after him, that they may keep the way of the Lord, to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him." So that's the goal. This is the objective, the long-term goal, and the way that he would attain that. This was fundamental to the purpose behind Abraham's covenantal calling and his position in the family. So purpose has to be defined by the Lord, and we have to bring our thinking, our priorities, and our activities into line with God's purpose for us. Likewise, the wife is called to be a helpmeet for her husband. That is, to help him accomplish his calling before the Lord. Now, a wife doesn't need to wonder what her purpose is in life. It's been revealed. It's been shown. This is what the purpose looks like. This is what the purpose is. The world despises us and constantly undermines it by throwing up more worthwhile purposes, more worthy goals to attain. The world caricatures the role and the importance of a godly wife and mother and portrays it as something irrelevant and demeaning. All a mother does all day is deal, this is how the world portrays it, is deal with snotty nose, dirty diapers, and childish squabbles. I mean, surely you've got more purpose and meaning in life than having to go through that day in and day out, unrelenting twaddle. You need a greater goal. You've got so much more potential. You've got so much more ability. How does a wife reach her potential when she is chained to such mundane, mind-numbing activities? And the world constantly bombards against us and in our direction from every conceivable angle. And many wives and mothers have bought into the legitimacy of the world's picture of what real purpose would look like. And thus, they have their hearts and their energy deflected from that calling and that responsibility, or seeing the significance of it. I'm not portraying here the fullness of what the wife's calling is. I'm saying that at the core of motherhood and generational vision is this aspect and this part of the life. By the nature of God's design, where you have the division of labor, the mother spends more time with the children. That's how God has designed the division of labor to be. So the mother, particularly when they're younger, necessarily spends more time with the children. And while this must never mean that the mother carries the responsibility for education and training the children, because the father should always carry this, he should always carry the responsibility and the direction that that goes, how that should unfold, even though his wife could be carrying it out for him, or how much he's involved, it can vary from circumstance to circumstance. But he's directing that. Nevertheless, the mother is going to be the one with more hands-on time in relating to the children, training and teaching them, and especially in those early years. What is vital in any kind of effective child training is shepherding their hearts, and this necessarily requires time. It takes time. It requires effort. It requires constant hands-on involvement in their lives so that they can learn obedience. They can learn honor. They can learn self-control. In other words, they can learn real wisdom. There's no way to obtain real wisdom other than through that channel of that hands-on, huge time investment that is laid on in those years. Without obedience and the ability to listen to and follow instructions, a child is ill-prepared for effective kingdom service. But to attain this is not easy. It requires constant, wholehearted commitment from the mother, which includes the father's help, support, and encouragement, but the mother's the one who's going to be day in, day out doing that identifying and communing with the heart, connecting, making sure that her eye is over everything, monitoring everything, so that the details are kept consistent and flowing in the right direction. So in order to do this, the mother has to obtain her purpose for life from God's covenantal structure. Otherwise, she'll be looking for ways to escape from the responsibility. Willful, untrained children do not make good, self-sacrificing mothers who bow their wills to God's purpose. And so what we're doing, we're perpetuating another generation. After the one we have failed to garnish and shape, the next generation starts off at maybe the same place where we're at, or just a little bit ahead, but it's still with this willfulness, this lack of focus on what is God's emphasis. So they'll be constantly chafing against the bit. You've raised a child who's self-willed and has not channeled that, has not brought that into subjection. Then that child enters into the next stage of their life as a self-willed child, and so they're chafing against the bit. I want to fulfill myself. I want to satisfy my passions. I want to satisfy and do my things, and these snotty-nosed little things are just holding me back. I mean, they didn't use that kind of language, maybe, but that's the feeling. And so then you don't have the connection with the heart. You don't have the identifying. You don't have the self-sacrifice of time and involvement in getting in and working with the heart and the squabbles and trying to deal with them. There are no shortcuts to training children, but it is achievable. It is God's goal of preparing the next generation to be effective for the kingdom so that there is exponential growth as well as each generation becoming more and more effective in their achievements for the Lord. And so that's the goal. That's its purpose. What is my purpose? My purpose, and you can go through it with a father or a mother, is exponential growth. My purpose is to train these children now at this age. It's going to get dynamic changes as the age changes, but these are the dynamics that I can find what my purpose is now. I don't have to be wondering and doubting what I'm doing. Children are the same. What purpose do children have? They say, well, what's my purpose? What am I here for? What is going on? Their purpose is this, that they might live long on the earth. The purpose. Fourth commandment's clear. This is talking about dominion, or else it's irrelevant. If that's not talking about dominion, it's absolutely irrelevant. What is the goal to live long on the earth in an increasingly godless society? I'm going to bless you with long life in a disintegrating pagan society. The goal is to live long on the earth for God's glorification, for the purpose of advancing His kingdom, for applying His truth to every area of life, for seeing an increase and saying, yes, this glorious blessing and privilege of serving in this way. That's what it's about. This command talks about success, because living long on the earth is a blessing, as Paul has come back to Ephesians. But I mean, he's quoting from Exodus, or you honor your father and your mother that your days may be long on the earth, which the Lord your God is giving you, Exodus 20:12, which Paul shows continues to be binding and relevant in the New Testament believer, saying, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother. Okay, so he's saying what that means. Obey your parents, because the command is honor your mother and father. He's not conflicting here. This is what it means, honoring means at this age in your life. Honor your mother and father, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. That's your goal, to live long on the earth. For what purpose? For the glory of God, for advancing His kingdom. And so now you've got the details. Okay, what does that look like? So vital to attaining the blessing of dominion, that is to live long on the earth, is the dusty requirement of honoring one's father and mother. That's the kind of uncomfortable detail that we have. That's in a nutshell. What is God's purpose for children? That they be equipped to be effective for the Lord by honoring their parents. That is, because effectiveness for the Lord through long life on the earth necessitates humble, submissive hearts. In order to live long on the earth, in order to be effective in this long life process of living on the earth, you need to have humble, submissive hearts. If you do not have humble, submissive hearts, you will not live long. You will not have the blessing of the Lord. Many parents think willfulness in a child is cute. Cute. Look at him. He's stamping his feet. You know, look at that look he's giving me. He's defiant, but man, is he doing with such strength? Many don't have the energy or time to deal with it. Well, it's like, my day's finished. Johnny, if you want to throw a tantrum now, that's your prerogative, but my day's finished. Many don't recognize how opposite willfulness is to the ways of the kingdom. And so we let it slide. We think, oh, I'm not going to expend my energy and time. I've got more important things to do than sort out this little issue here. I have more important kingdom-moving things to do. The first 8 chapters of Proverbs is a call for children to hear the instruction of their parents. It's vital. Wisdom, the foundation of wisdom is being able to hear instruction, to receive instruction. Yet a willful heart stubbornly resists instruction. They refuse to be taught. They refuse to be submitted to instruction. They refuse to bow to the teaching that comes their way. To any teaching I don't like, I refuse to bow to it. If I like it, I'll bow to it. But not all training is pleasant and fun. So how does someone who will not bow their will to someone else's will and who only wants what is fun and pleasant, how is this person going to attain real wisdom? Oh. Well, attain fantasy wisdom, you know, that's like fantasy football. You can attain that kind of wisdom. Oh, you know, I'd love to have all this knowledge and wisdom. Oh, bow your heart. This is what it looks like. Receive instruction. So what is God's purpose for the young people? It's that they learn real wisdom. It's that they learn obedience. That they learn how to honor those in authority over them. That they learn how to bow their wills to the will of another. That they forsake self-seeking and self-pleasing. Thus it is rebellion when people say that they have no purpose in life because God has given clear purpose. Well, I know what purpose is. God has given clear purpose. It says you don't like the purpose God has given you, so you're trying to find a different purpose. And they're rejecting God's purpose. People struggle in this area of finding purpose, not because God's purpose is unclear, but because they refuse to bow their hearts to what God has called them to do. Well, here's the purpose. Let's come back to square one and let's do some honoring and obedience. Let's come back to square one and do some listening to instruction. Let's come back to square one and do some instructing of the family. Why has this come back then? And let's really get into the details of training these hearts and nurturing them and bringing consistency and training and obedience training. Let's bring consistency there. That's purpose. That's fundamental purpose. But we don't view it like that. We always look beyond these basic mundanes and think, well, I'm going to find something more significant out there, something greater, something more noticeable. The focus, ultimately, for self-serving people is upon themselves. And thus, the way they define purpose is according to how much pleasure something gives them. How we define purpose is fundamental to the advancing or the unraveling of our families, of the church, and of the nation. How we define and how we approach purpose. If God's word is not going to define what our purpose is, and thus what our responsibilities are, then who is going to define these? Can we trust our hearts to do this for us? Self-serving people define selfishness as any action that is not done for their benefit, and they're offended by such negligence. How come you people are not focusing upon me? I mean, I've been here for 20 minutes, and you have not noticed me. Not that self-serving person doesn't have purpose. It's just that his purpose has been defined by a sinful heart rather than by the Lord of the universe. If we fail to define our purpose in terms of God's revelation, then we will be serving ourselves and pampering our flesh and feeding our lusts, all in the name of kingdom work, if we're in the church. We'll do that in the name of kingdom work. I've told you before of that nauseating, was at a conference, and there was a blurb given to somebody to come up to the front and promote some extra little conference they were putting on, and it was really called something about pampering. And it was designed at the wives to come and pamper yourselves. And this was the thing, come and just, you know, we're just going to pamper you, we're going to have these pampering situations, and we just want to do this. That mindset, you're thinking, wait a bit, I'm not talking about giving a break and having a rest, but the whole mindset in terms of that was the high selling point, where you can just come and be free from all your responsibilities, but in a pampering context. What is the purpose of life? What is the purpose of our existence? How do we know? How do I know what it is? Well, to serve God. Well, yeah. How do I serve Him? What does that look like in the details? What are my responsibilities, and how do I know those responsibilities? How can I be sure that what I'm doing and what I'm giving myself to is the Lord's will, is His purpose for me, and not my own deluded self-serving? How do I know I'm not serving myself in this? The movie of the guy who's trying to kill himself in a war situation, and so he keeps throwing himself into the most extreme dangerous situations because he wants to die, and he just is not being killed, and he's this great hero. And all he was doing, he was not sacrificing himself for the benefit of others. He was not doing that for anything but himself. I want to die, and I don't have the whatever it was. I'm going to shoot my own brains out, so I'm going to just run into the most craziest situation and hope that somebody shoots me. And he wasn't getting shot. But is he serving the benefit of others? Is he seeking what's good for others? No. So how do we know we're not doing that? It's not just the externals. We need to know for sure that what I'm doing, what I'm giving myself to, is indeed God's purpose. I believe God has shown us what this looks like. And while I've not touched upon our purpose in every area of life, I believe we've seen enough where we can apply the same principles to everything God has called us to do. We have purpose, and God has defined it for us. And may we be found faithful in bowing our hearts to His purpose and His definitions, and trusting that as we do those, we are being equipped. As we fulfill those responsibilities, as we bow our wills, as we receive instruction, and etc., and the different things we've talked about, as we do that, we are being equipped for effective service in His kingdom. So as that goes forth, may we trust His word, and not our own desires and our own passions. Any questions or clarifications needed?